Today, Shimon the Daf Yomi is the Gemara in Kesubos Daf Chaf. We're already almost halfway down on Chaf Omer Aleph, 16 lines down from the top with the words Omer Rabbi Yavo. We're learning today Li Lishmas Donald Greenstein, David Shlomo Ben Aaron. All the neshamos we learned for should have an aliyah from our learning. So, as I said, we pick up on Chaf Omer Aleph, 16 lines down with the words Omer Rabbi Yavo. This repeats something that we learned in yesterday's share, where we said, Ein mezimin esu'edim ela bifnein. And yesterday we said that the Hazama process, which is different than the Hachosha process, but there are some similarities between them. When you have Eide Hazama, you have Reuven and Shimon that said, we were in New York at 10 o'clock on Tuesday morning, and we saw this occur. And the Eide Hazama, Levi and Shimon, say, no, in fact, you weren't in New York at 10 o'clock on Tuesday morning, you were with us in Chicago on 10 o'clock on Tuesday morning. So that's Hazama. The Torah gives automatic believance to the second Eidim as opposed to the first Eidim. Now, in the case of Hachasha, where the two groups just disagree with each other, the Torah doesn't give any more believability to the second group than they do to the first group. So, Rabbi Yavo tells us, Ein mezimin esu edim ela b'pneim. We learned in yesterday's share, and Rav Avoh reiterates that the Hazama process can only be if the edim are in front of them. If you don't have the edim in front of them, as Rashi points out, Shari imboim l'chayvon kidei la'onshan o nefesh omam, since these people are going to be punished, kasher zomam lassos, like they tried to do, so therefore they have to be present at the time that the new witnesses come in. So when Levi and Yehuda come in and say, you were this in Chicago at 10 o'clock on Tuesday morning, you're not in New York like you're claiming, so they have to be present. Reuven and Shimon have to be present when the Eide Hazama, Levi and Yehuda, come in and say that the first witnesses were Eidim Zomimim. However, Umachishin Etzo Eidim Shelo B'fneim. But Rabbi Yavo disagrees with Rav Nachman from yesterday's year. Rabbi Yavo says that they don't need this in Eide Hachosha. So if Levi and Yehuda disagree with what Reuven and Shimon said, Reuven and Shimon said that a person, Yankel, lent money to Yitzchak. And Levi and Yehuda say, no, he didn't lend money to Yitzchak. We were there at the time, and it wasn't a loan. So therefore, if it's Eide HaChosha, so then that doesn't have to be in the presence of Reuven and Shimon. However, he does point out, V'hazama shelo b'fneim, when you do have Eide HaZama that come in, and their original Eidim aren't present. So if Levi and Yehuda say, you were with us in Chicago at 10 o'clock on Tuesday morning, not in New York like you're saying, so that HaZama wasn't in front of Reuven and Shimon, nevertheless, it won't count as Eide Hazama, but still, Hachosha mi yahavya, it will count as a argument, and therefore, we don't believe anymore the first group of witnesses, and the second group of witnesses contradicts them. This is the regular rules of Hachosha, that we don't believe either one in that situation. We have testimony that is in disagreement, it's opposite from two different Eidim. If there's no Hazama, nevertheless, there still could be Hachosha shelo b'fneihem, even though they were saying that they're Eide Hazama. Okay. Amamar, who are now quotes what we said yesterday's Bryce as well. It says, Im yesh edim sheksav yodam huzeh. If you have independent corroboration that the witnesses on the document are in fact those witnesses, for example, other people come along, not the witnesses themselves, but other people come along and say, yes, that is the handwriting of so and so. Or, Osho yaksav yodam yosi mokamacher. We have independent proof that the witness's signature on the document is in fact verified because we compare it to another document. For example, Mishtar Shekarlov Ara, from a document that had been challenged, and Vuhuchsak Bebeistin, had been authenticated in Beistin, so now we can state for certain, after that challenge, that this is really their signatures, and there's no doubt about it. If it wasn't challenged, some of them Farshim say, so then how do we know that the Beistin actually is authenticating it? So when it's challenged, and the Beistin had to go authenticate it, that's what we're referring to. Others say, no, as long as the Beistin authenticated it, then you can use any Beistin's authentication. They're just saying the common situation is why we basically have to authenticate the document in a very definitive way. That's when there was a challenge. In any event, if they authenticated shtar that they have in front of them right now from a previously used shtar that had questions about it, and those questions, those challenges were answered definitively, yes, this is a valid shtar. So then, A'nemonim. So now, the witnesses no longer have the peshasa peshahita, since the signature on their document was verified, authenticated via alternate means than they themselves saying, this is our signature, so therefore they're not believed to say, but we were anusim, we were ketanim, we are psula edus at that time. So they lost the peshasa peshahita, as we said, for the last couple of days in that situation. Now, that implies kara alav aror, only if there was a challenge to the document and the basin was huchsach, they established it. In that situation, can we use this shtar for independent verification of the shtar that's in front of us right now? But it implies lo kora olav arar. If there was no challenge, it was just said that this was a good document in the basin without it being challenged, so then lo, it implies that that's not enough of an authentication. And this is in accordance with Messiah Lila Ravasi. This proves or is in support of what Ravasi said. What did Ravasi say? Dama Ravasi, ein mekayim l'shtar. We only were able to go and authenticate a shtar, to be mekayim shtar, ela, only from mishtar, from a different shtar, shekaru alav arar, behuksak mevesin. Only from a shtar that was challenged, only from a shtar that had a question as to its legitimacy, and it was then proven in Beisdin that that challenge was in fact a incorrect challenge, that it really is an authenticated shtar. So if you've gone through these troubles, as I mentioned a minute ago, the Mefarshim say, therefore you can guarantee that this is an authentic shtar. So only in this situation does Rav Asi say that you can use this shtar to authenticate other shtaros. Because if it hasn't been challenged, then how do you know that it's accurate? It may have looked superficial like it's accurate, and therefore nobody questioned it. But when you have a challenge, and then you pass the challenge, you were arguing that this is not really the signature, and then you looked into it, you really investigated, and then you proved that it was the signature, so that type of a shtar now can be used to authenticate other shtars. That's what Ravasi says. Now the Gemara continues, says, Ami Nardoi, in the city of Nardoi, they said, the Chacham there said, Ein mekaymes hashtar el mishtek subos, o mishtei sodos. The proper way to authenticate a shtar is to compare it to two other ksubos that were signed by those edim, and in this way you can guarantee that this is really a valid signature, because you're comparing it to two shtaros, either two ksubos or two shtei sodos. Now these are documents where a person sold a field. Yankel sold his field to Yitzchak, and in this situation there's a bill of sale, and you look at this bill of sale, and Yitzchak brings this forward, and we have two of these such documents. And likewise, we're dealing here that he was on this property and he ate from this property. And he was on this for the 3 years of Chazaka. So there obviously was a chance for somebody to protest this. Ubishofi. Rashi elsewhere in Bamidbar and Chumash, Perichol Gimel, Pasuk Gimel says that this means shtika. Shofi means a lashon of vishokat. It was quiet. Rashi over here says below ira. There was no challenge to it. So in this situation, we can pretty much guarantee that this is a valid shtar. So if you have two of such staros, either two ksubos or two shtei sados documents, so then you can use them to authenticate another shtar. That's what the Nardoi said, but Rav Shimi Barashi qualifies it a little bit. Rav Shimi Barashi says that's only true. Ubiyotze mitachas yad acher. That's only if another person has these two shtaros, but not the person who's trying to use the shtar right now to collect in Beisdin. He can't bring forward these, because then we have to be concerned, since he has these other two shtaros in his possession. Whatever the reason is, he has two ksubas in his possession, or he has two shtei sados in his possession, and in this situation, we have to be concerned. Rashi points out that the person had a lot of time to go and look at those signatures, and he could therefore possibly falsify the signatures, because he has them in front of him, he's copying them, he's medakdei to mizayif to go and falsify those signatures. So therefore, if he's the one that had the document, it's not going to be believed. But if somebody else has those documents, so he hasn't had a chance to look at it, but not from his own. So if the person who has the shtar in front of the basin right now, he's the one that brings out two other shtaros, or two ksubos, or shtei sados, and he says, look at the basin, these are the same signatures. So we have to be concerned that since he had them in his possession, he was able to forge the signatures. But if he's not the one that has them, somebody else had them, so then we don't have to be concerned that he forged the signatures in that situation. More questions and says, wait a second. Maishno tachas yad atzmo delo. Why do we say that if it's under his own hand, in other words, he had the other two shtaros, so we have to be concerned that he forged it, because Dilma Zayufi Mizai, because we have to be concerned that he's copying it so carefully, because he has those in his possession. He has all night to go and copy them, and he can make a perfect forgery. But why is that not true with somebody else? Mitachas yad acher nami. Why aren't we concerned if those shtaros are available with somebody else? Dilma Ozal, maybe he went, v'chozo, he looked at it, and also v'zayif, and then he went and forged it, because those documents are either a public record or they're available to look at. So why aren't we concerned in that situation? If you're concerned about a forgery, why are you only concerned about a forgery when he has the documents in his own possession, but we're not concerned when he could have looked at them in somebody else's possession? Smog gives an obvious teretz. Smog says, no, kuli hai lomosi mechavet. If you are not in the possession of those other shtaros, so you look at it for a second or two while you're at the guy's house, but you're not staring at it, you're not having it in front of you when you're trying to forge the signature. So therefore, in a situation where it's not in your possession, we don't have to be as concerned. If it's in your possession, so then we do have to be concerned that, in fact, you had plenty of time to go and forge it. Where Gittinu says, Tanu Rabban, we learn the following braisa, Kosev Adam Edusu al Ashtar. A person is allowed to write down his testimony that he gave on a shtar. Again, he writes it down, as Rashi says, on a piece of paper. Rashi Nira Masu Kosev Adam says, Imoso Eid Bedoper. So a person was a witness, and he wants to keep records of that, so he'll remember it. So the Yare L'Shacho is afraid that a year from now, 2 years from now, 5 years from now, he's going to forget the details. So he's allowed to write himself a note. Kosev Al Achetich Eschaf, he writes on a piece of parchment, Umatzdeya, and he puts it away. So he'll have records, right? He files it away for future reference. So if a person did this, Kosev Adam Eiduso Al Hashtar, so the Braisa says, he is allowed to use that Umei Dolel. He can use those notes and refer to them afilu li'achar kama shonim, even after many years. So this way, it'll refresh his memory. That's the critical word here, that it refreshes his memory, because that's what Rav Huna says. Rav Huna, busha zochra me'atzmo. When he looks at his notes, it brings back his memory. But if he has no recollection whatsoever, he says, I just don't remember. This is what my handwriting says. I have no doubt that it's accurate, but he has no independent recollection of what transpired. So then Rav Huna says, that would be no good. It's only if these notes jog his memory. So Rav Huna says, busha zochra me'atzmo. If this makes him remember, as Rashi says, "Di Ramaskur Zochem Yatzvo below Rias Ashtar Niskar Tzas Me'Eduso Me'Elav." Even without this document, he remembers some of the details, and this just fills in the full picture. So then, Rav Huna says it's acceptable. But if he doesn't remember it all, and this is really his entire recollection right now, is what he wrote down, then it's no good. That is what Rav Huna said. Rav Yochanan disagrees. Rav Yochanan Amar, even if he has no independent recollection, as Rashi says in Afal Pi. He looks at his document that he wrote down. He looks at his notes. Now, he pays attention to it. The niskar, and now he remembers it. So now it does bring back something. So even Rav Yochanan says it has to bring back something. But even Rav Yochanan says if you have zero remembrance whatsoever. Lo, that's no good, because the Torah tells us, mi pihem, velo mi pi ksavim. So even Rav Yochanan says, you have to have a little bit of a memory, but even though you don't remember all the details, and this document makes you remember all the details, that would be fine according to Rav Yochanan, but as long as you have a little bit of a memory. Whereas Rav Huna says, you have to jog the memory, and if it jogs your memory, then you can use your notes. But if it doesn't jog your memory, but you're seeing the notes, and that fills in the information, according to Rav Huna, that would not be good. On my rabba, that's the girsa that we have. The Masoros Hashas over here says it should be Rava, no Stalin. He says that's also where we find in the Shiltos this girsa of Rava, and also in the Rif and in the Rush. In any event, let's call it Rava, Omar Rava. Shmami nomi Rav Yochanan. We see from Rav Yochanan, Hani Bei Trey. You have these two witnesses, the Yodhi Sadusa, that know a certain testimony. But Uminshe Chad Minayu. Minshe is a Loshon. Rashi tells us in the Gemara Sanhedrin that means the Shachach. He forgot. So if one of them forgot some of the details, Midkar Chad L'Chabri. The other witness, you have Reuven and Shimon, the two witnesses. Reuven remembers everything clearly. Shimon doesn't remember so clearly. So Reuven is allowed to go and tell him, this is what happened. Don't you remember? And that would be acceptable. Based upon what Rabbi Yochanan says, as long as he now has independent recollection, so even though he didn't remember all the details, but this reminds him of it, so then, according to Rabbi Yochanan, that would still be acceptable. Now they ask in the Beis Medrash the following Shaila. Yibayluhu. Atzmo mai. What happens if the litigant, the one who's bringing these witnesses to support him, he has to go and remind them what happened? He goes over to Reuven Shimon. 5 years ago, you were the witnesses at this deal. So please come and testify to me. They said, we really don't remember so well. And he says, well, don't you remember? We were in this meeting room, and the guy came in, and he had his attorney, and we had our attorney, and this is what went on. It was a rainy day outside, and the window broke, and all the details, and he gives them all the details. Is that acceptable that they now remember? So we have a machlokis here. Rav Chaviva Amar Afilu Atzmo, and Mabri the Rav Ashi Amar Atzmo Lo. So here you have a machlokis. Could the litigant himself be providing the witnesses with additional background information that jogs their memory? So Rav Chaviva says, yeah, why not? Why should it make any difference? After all, they're not following what he said. It just reminds them. But Mabri the Rav Ashi says, no, that's too close to he may be like putting memories in their head, and we don't allow this. How do we paskin? The Gemara says, "V'hilchasa atzmo lo." We, in fact, are concerned that he may be providing them with information that they don't really remember, and it sounds good, so they say, yeah, we remember it, but they really don't, and therefore the Gemara concludes that Ma'abri of the Rashi is correct, atzmo lo. However, there's a caveat over here, and we turn to Chofo Mibes. V'itzurva me'rabbaninu, if he's a Talmud Chacham, one of the Edom over here is a Talmud Chacham, so then, afilu atzmo, then we really allow the litigant to go and jog his memory here, because in that situation, we're sure the Talmud Chacham is not going to say something if he doesn't really remember it. As Rashi says, afilu atzmo, shel bal din, the tzuv d'rabbanon, ilav d'chirami anafshei midkar shapir lo habisomich, asveikul lemekam v'asudei. There's no way a Talmud Chacham would go and say something unless he truly, absolutely remembered. He knows the severity of false testimony. He knows the dinim. And therefore, in this situation, where he's a Talmud Chacham, who has an impeccable honesty, that we're not concerned at all that he'll make something up. So then we can trust him to, even Marbe Rav Ashi would say in this situation, that the Tzurvim Rabbanim would be acceptable, because there's no way that he would say something if it wasn't absolutely true. And a Maisa Shahaya, where this exactly happened. He heard the Rav Ashi, once it was occurring to Rav Ashi, Hayavadir Lebe Sadusa Rav Kahana. He knew testimony for Rav Kahana, but he didn't remember it. So Amalei, so Rav Kahana said to him, Mi Dochir Mar Hay Sadusa, do you remember it? And Amalei, Rav Ashi said, unfortunately, no, I don't remember it. So Rav Kahana tells him, V'lav Hochi B'Hochi Abba, this is what happened. Don't you remember? We were in the base medrash, and the guy came up to us, and he wanted to borrow money from me, whatever the situation was. So V'lav Hochi B'Hochi Abba, Rav Kahana reminded Rav Ashi. And then, Amalei, lo yadata. Rav Ashi said, I still don't remember, I'm sorry. But then, ultimately, lesof, itka Rav Ashi. Subsequently, Rav Ashi must have thought about it for a while, and then he did remember. So he went and testified on behalf of Rav Kahana, asidlei. However, Rav Kahana was very, very surprised at this. Chazel Rav Kahana, davi mechasim. He saw that Rav Kahana was very, very upset almost. Rav Chassi, Rav Ashi says, Begamgen, he was stuttering and stammering. Toma Rav Ashi, Shehei B'dover. Rav Ashi had told Rav Kahana, I don't remember. So, okay, Rav Kahana said, so I don't have you as a witness. But now he comes forward. So Rav Kahana was terrified that maybe this was a perversion of justice, that in fact Rav Ashi had such respect for Rav Kahana, and he said, if Rav Kahana says this happened, so Rav Ashi said, sure, now I remember. So Rav Kahana was terrified. He was Begamgen, he was Mechassim, that maybe Rav Ashi wasn't telling the truth. So only Rav Ashi reassured him. He said, don't worry. Mi sabres aloch kot samichta? Do you really think I would say this if I didn't remember it? I'm trusting on you? No. Anahu diramoya nafshai. Vidkari. I concentrated. And Baruch Hashem, I was able to remember. And therefore, I'm giving this testimony. I remember what happened. Yeah, you may have jogged my memory a little bit by telling me, but now when I thought about it, I was able to go and in fact say the correct sequence of events, I do remember what happened. This is important because originally Rav Ashi had said, Lo Yadana. So we see that even though he said Lo Yadana, if he subsequently remembered, so we don't exclude him as if he had said Lo Yadana as his official testimony, I don't know. That was just at that point in time, he didn't remember. But if he subsequently does remember, he still is a kosher aid. Tanan Hasan, we learned in the following Mishnah in Alos, it says over there, Hatelulios. A telulios is the plural for the word tell. Tell is an interesting word. It's both an English and a Hebrew word that means a mound of dirt, like Tel Aviv. So a tel is an English word that means a little mound of dirt, and in Hebrew it means also a mound of dirt. So telulios is the plural for a tel, a mound of dirt. Hakirovos, that is nearby. We'll see in a moment what we mean by nearby. We'll define that momentarily. Bein lo'ir, bein laderech. And this mound of earth, which again we'll see, could easily have had something buried over there. And whether it's near the city or whether it's near the road, Echod Chadoshos, whether it's a brand new mound of earth, everybody remembers that it wasn't there 2 weeks ago, and now they see this mound of earth there. The Echod Yishanos, or whether the mound of earth has been there for a long period of time, again, we'll define what we mean by a long period of time, Timaeos. We have to be concerned that since it's near the, quote, city and the derech, which we'll explain in a moment, so we have to be concerned that somebody buried somebody over there, whether it was a Nephel or whether it was a person, and therefore it is Matame Tumas Mace. If you're mahil over it or if you touch it, so then there are potential problems with Tuma. That is what this Mishnah in Arlos tells us. But Harachokos, if it's far away from either the ear or the derech, so then it depends. Chadoshos, if it's brand new, it wasn't present previously. So now we know that it was just put down there recently. If somebody had actually been buried over there would have been a call, there would have been a publicization, there would have been a knowledge about it, because people just don't die and get buried without it being public knowledge. So if it's a brand new tale, so therefore in that situation, we do not have to be concerned that somebody actually buried it there. No, whatever the reason, somebody dug it up over there, and that's why there's a mound of dirt over there. But it's not because somebody was buried there, because if it's Chadashos, it's brand new, we would know about it. But if it's Yishanos, if it's an old mound, so then we don't know what happened 20 years ago. And therefore, to us, we have to be concerned that there is a dead body buried over there. That was the Mishnah in Ahalos tells us. Now, how do we define what krova, the Mishnah Telulios HaKrovos, and then we said Horechokos. What does it mean? It's near the city or the road, or it's far away from the city or the road? How do we define krova? So Ezoi krova. We ask on the Mishnah, what does it mean, krova? So the Mishnah tells us, Chamishim Amma. It was within 50 Amma of the city or of the road. That is called krovos. And if it's beyond 50 Amma, that is called Rechokos. And what's the definition of Chadoshos and Yeshanos? So the Ezohi Yeshana, what does it mean if it's there for a while? It's old. Shishim Shana. So the Mishnah tells us it's more than 60 years old, so then that's considered old. If it's less than 60 years old, we'll have a knowledge about it, and therefore it's not a concern if it's Rechokos, because we'll have known if somebody buried somebody over there, but it has to be within the last 60 years. If it's more than 60 years ago, so then we may not know what went on over there. That is the opinion, Diri Rameir. That's Rameir's opinion. Again, Chamisha Amma is the definition of far away, and 60 years is the definition of old. Review that disagrees. Review Domer. Krova, the definition of it's near the city or the road, is She'en Krova Menu. It's the closest mound to the city or to the road. Then it's called Krovos. If it's not the closest mound, then it's called Rechokos. And the definition of Yeshana is She'en Adam Zohar. Nobody remembers that it was there, as opposed to if it was Chadasho, somebody remembers, yeah, I remember there was no mound over there, and 10 years ago they put that mound over there. So then that's called Chadashos. But if nobody remembers when there was no mound over there, that by definition is Yeshana, but it's not necessarily 60 years. It could be 5 years, it could be 10 years. Okay, so that's the Machlokos in Rav Meir and Yehuda as to what Krovos and Rechokos means and what Chadashos and Yeshanos mean. Now, the Gemara asks, what does it mean that it was Krovos or Rechokos from the city or from the derech? Bein lo ir uvein lo derech. My ir u my derech. What city and what road are we talking about? If you're going to tell me lema ir, when it says it's near a city, means ir mamish, it means any city, and derech, the road, means any derech, derech mamish, so then any mound that's near a city and any mound that's near a road, you're going to be metame, misveika, you're going to make them potentially metamim, something that comes into contact with them or a mile over them, tense over them. So then you're going to do that and say that it's tummy now, tumas meis? Mimechachzin on tumma. Really? Do we go and make such large swaths of Eretz Yisrael going to be metami tumas meis? After all, Amar Yishlokish, Yishlokish taught us ila matzu. Now, ila, Rashi tells us, is an interesting word. He says it comes from the lashon of alila, like a libel. So, alila bi'alma matzu chachamim ve'gziku bo litlos oleha ulataris Eretz Yisrael b'mesechus nazir b'perg basra. So, we see this in the Gemara in Nazir that we don't go and make areas of Eretz Yisrael tummy. And if there's any excuse whatsoever that we can say that it's definitely not tummy, so then we say that it's not tummy. We don't make places tummy out of suffix. Alma. Misveika, Rashi continues, lo mechaskinon tumah bekarkor shel Eretz Yisrael. So unless you have definitive tumah, so we can almost always say that it's not going to be tumah else sofek. So therefore, ila matzah with Eretz Yisrael. Any reason, so to say, that they can remove the definitive status of this being metami tumah sneis and turn it into a sofek, so that's good enough, because we don't want to make Eretz Yisrael, the cities or the roads, have extra tumah, because there's going to be all problems with taros, there'll be all problems with trumas and maisusheni, etc. So therefore, unless we know for certain, we don't make all these places tummy al sofik. So what are you telling us over here? That if it's near an ear or near a derech, then we go make it tummy al sofik. So Amar Zera explains, when we say ear, we're not talking about any city. We're talking about ear hasmuchol beis hakvaros. So it's only talking about the city that's closest to the cemetery. Here, you do have to go and be concerned that they didn't make it all the way to the cemetery, and that's why any mound over here, you have to assume it was raining, it was dark, it was whatever the situation may be, and they buried the person right near the cemetery, and that's why if it's the closest city to the cemetery, you have to be concerned that they came out of that city, didn't make it to the cemetery, and therefore this mound that you have over here, these telulios, are in fact going to be tummy tumas meis. And likewise the road, b'derech, which road are you referring to? Not every single road, but derech beis hakvaros. This is the road that goes either to or through the cemetery. So yes, you have to be concerned in this situation that what in fact happened is they didn't have a chance to go all the way to the cemetery, and they buried him right off this road that leads to or goes through the cemetery. And in these two situations, the city, smuchel beis hakvaros, and the derech, towards the Beis HaKvaros, in those places, if you find the mound, then we say that even Al Sofik, we go and give it the status of being Matami to a space if you're mahil over it. But any other city, any other road, we do not do so, like Reish Lakish had said, Ila Matsu v'tiaru Eretz Yisrael. See where it says now, Bishloma Derech Beis HaKvaros. We understand why on the Derech to the Beis HaKvaros, here there's a high likelihood that in fact there is Tumas Meis over there because it's on the way to the cemetery. So therefore, in that situation, we understand why we're going to make this Al Safek Tame. As the war says, the Zimnim, at times it's going to happen, the Misrami Ben Hashmashos, they're going to bury a person right during twilight period of time when it's getting dark, they didn't have the electricity and all the powerful lights that we could shine on, and it's going to be pitch black. They'll have a candle, they'll have a torch, but it's going to be pitch black, and Umikru, and it's going to happen, the Kavru Batel, and they're going to just say, we can't go to the cemetery, it's scary, there's not enough light there, we won't be able to bury there, let's bury right here while we still have enough light from twilight, and they'll bury right off the road. So that's why we understand why on the roads to the cemetery, there could easily be a tale that they buried somebody there. But Eloir, Asmuch Lebeis HaKvaros, Kuli Lebeis HaKvaros Hazli, why would they bury in the city? Pick up the nace and bring him to the cemetery. So why should a tale that's near the city be a concern? So Gemara says, Amar Chanina, no, this is teaching us. There'll be times that a woman will miscarry, and she's embarrassed that she miscarried, and it's also difficult for her to go all the way to the cemetery by herself, and therefore she will bury her Nebuch, the dead fetus, she's going to go and bury it right near the city. So therefore, if you find a mound that's near the cemetery, in the city that's near the cemetery, so then you have to be concerned that there actually is a buried fetus over there. Or likewise, the Gemara tells us, Ruchanina says, Umuke Shchin, Zro Seim, the people that had Nebuch Shchin, certain types of skin illnesses. So this would be something like a gangrene. And they have these boils that cause them to have gangrene, and their limbs literally fall off. They lost a digit. They lost something that would be metami to mesmes. So we're concerned that these people aren't going to go all the way to the cemetery. They'll just bury it in some sort of a mound, and it'll be metami to mesmes. And therefore, that's why if it's karov le'ir, these people, the woman burying their babies, Nebuch that died, kovushom niflayim, they'll bury the miscarried baby over there. And the mukishchin, the people that have these gangrenous limbs, or they have some sort of a skin lesion that is going to cause their limbs to fall off, a digit or even an entire limb from the gangrene, so then they'll bury it right over there. So that's what Ruchanina says, that we have to be concerned about mounds, the taltulios, these tails in the plural, so we have to go and be concerned about them. Then the Gemara says, Ad Chamishim Amma Oz Li'i L'chuda. We explain why the 50 Amma mark, according to Rav Meir, was considered a significant amount. Because up until 50 Amma, the woman would go by herself. So if you find any mounds within 50 Amma of the city or of the road, so that's very possible that the woman went to bury it there. But Tvei, if it was more than 50 Amma, she wouldn't go on her own. And once she's not going on her own, Dabur Inish Bada, if she's going to have a man accompany her, so then, well, the Beis HaKvaros Hazla, she's going to go to the Beis HaKvaros. Once she has a man to protect her, so then she's not going to go and bury it at 55 Amma away from the road of the city. She'll say, let's go to the cemetery ready. I have somebody to protect me. And therefore, in this situation, if it's beyond 50 Amma, that's what Rav Meir had said, beyond 50 Amma, we're not concerned. And therefore, the Gemara concludes, this is Hilchach, you see from here, Tuma Be'er Yisrael, Lo Machas Kinon, because we don't want to go and make any additional places in Eretz Yisrael Tuma, Tame, because of this potential concern. And therefore, up to 50 Amma, yeah, because that's somewhat likely, but beyond that, it's very, very unlikely, or much less likely, and therefore, Al Sofik, we don't say that these tales, these taltulios, are going to be metame to masmes, even Al Sofik. Amr Chisu says, Shmagna Rebeir, we see from this opinion of Rebeir, Rebeir was the one that said 50 Amma, and he also said 60 years. That was the definition of Yeshana. So Rav Chisda says, from the fact that Rebeir says 60 years is something that we still remember, so he says, for Eidos, it also was 60 years. Hai Sadus, if a person remembers an event from 60 years ago, Ad Shisin Shin Midkar, up to 60 years, he still can have a recollection and could testify about it. But more than 60 years, Tvei, Lo Midkar, we see from this a statement of Rebeir in this Mishnah from Alos, that beyond 60 years, people don't have a clear memory, and therefore you can't testify about something if it's more than 60 years ago. But the Gemara says that's incorrect, Velohi, because in the situation of the tale, you weren't paying attention. Hasam Hudlo Ramiale. Yeah, there was a mound over there. So, yeah, for 60 years I'll remember it, but more than 60 years I won't remember because I didn't pay any attention to it. But if I testified about something when I was a teenager, and a person is now 70 years old, so 80 years old, it's more than 60 years, so when the item happened when he was bar mitzvah, so then Avohacha, Kivan the Rami Aleh, he put his mind to it. He says, I gave testimony as a bar mitzvah boy. I remember that. It was the first time I ever gave Eidos. I was asked to be signing on a loan. And I remember it like it was yesterday. Avohach, in this situation, Kivan the Rami Aleh, even though it's more than 60 years, but he put his mind to it, Afilu Tuva Nami. So a person could give testimony even more than 60 years. When it's something that happened to have occurred, so then we say 60 years is a cutoff, because you didn't put your mind to it. But if something you put your mind to it, like giving a testimony, so then even more than 60 years, you're allowed to go and testify about it because you put your mind to it. It's a relatively short shir for now, so let's keep going a little bit weiter in the next Mishnah. So the Mishnah tells us, Zeh Omer Ksav Yodi. Reuven is the witness, and he has a document over here, and he says, yeah, that's my handwriting. That's me. I signed that document. And then Reuven also says, Bezeh Ksav Yodo Shel Chaveri. That's Shimon over there. I remember his handwriting. We were there together. I recognize his handwriting. So he's supplying proof. He's authenticating not only his own signature, but he's also authenticating Shimon's signature. And Shimon does the same thing. Zeh Omer, Shimon says, Zeh Ksav Yodo. Yeah, that's my handwriting. Zeh Ksav Yodo Shel Chaveri. And that is Reuven's handwriting. So you have both Reuven testifying about his own signature and Shimon's signature, and Shimon testifying about his own signature and Reuven's signature. So the Mishnah tells us, Hare Ilan Amoni, you have two witnesses testifying about each signature, perfectly good. However, the Tanakhama of our Mishnah says, Zelmer Zek Savyadi. If Reuven says, that's my handwriting, Zelmer Zek Savyadi, and Shimon says, that's my handwriting, so then that's one witness testifying about each of their handwriting. We don't believe that person to say that's his own handwriting. We just believe him to say as a witness that that's my handwriting. And therefore, the Tanakhama of our Mishnah, which is Rebbe, says, Tzrichin Letzarif Imoim Acher Divrei Rebbe. Rebbe says that you need to have a second person. So along with Reuven, you need to have Levi. So both Reuven and Levi say this is Reuven's signature. And along with Shimon, who's saying this is my signature, you need Yehuda to come along and say that this is Shimon's signature. So if you have Reuven and Levi saying this is Reuven's signature, and you have Shimon and Yehuda testifying that this is Shimon's signature, Rebbe says that's acceptable. But if you just have Reuven about his signature and just have Shimon about his signature, Rebbe's opinion is that's no good. The Chacham disagree. The Chacham Amrim, no. Einam Tzrichim Litzarif Imon Acher. Reuven doesn't need somebody else to testify that that's his signature. He says, this is my signature. And Shimon says, this is my signature. You don't need somebody else to come along with them. El Nemon Adam Lomar Zeh Kisav Yodi. The Chacham hold that each person is believed as a single person to say, that's my signature. So when Reuven says, that's my signature, and Shimon says, that's my signature, the Chacham say, that's a perfectly valid shtar. Whereas the opinion of Rebbe is, unless you have two people verifying the signature, it's not enough to have just the signatory himself saying that's my signature. But unless you have another person, Rebbe says it's not good. What are they arguing about? So the Gemara starts off and tells us, Kishatim se lomar. If you're going to tell me that Rebbe's opinion is, Ledivri Rebbe, return to Chafalav Amar Aleph, Al-Ksav Yodon Hem Idim. According to Rebbe, they're only testifying about the handwriting. They're not testifying about what's in the content of the shtar. That's why Rebbe says you need two people to testify. You need two witnesses to testify about each signature. And according to the Chachamim, the Rechachamim, Almoneh Shebishtar Hemidim. When Reuven comes and says, that's my signature, he's essentially also saying, I'm giving the testimony of the shtar. By saying, that's my signature, I'm saying that, yeah, Yankel lent you Yitzchak $100 in that shtar. And Shimon does the same thing. So according to the Chachamim, they're not testifying only about their signatures, they're testifying about the content of the shtar. And that's why you have two people, Reuven and Shimon, each testifying about the content of the shtar, not only about the signatures. Whereas the opinion of Rebbe is that they're testifying about the signatures, and that's why you need two signatures. If you don't have two signatures, it's not good. That must be the understanding of our Mishnah. The machlok is between Rebbe and the Chachamim. Gemara says, Pshita, how else would you possibly have learned it? That's the only way to learn this. Gemara says, no. I might have thought, Mao Ditema, I might have said on my own that L'Rebbe, in fact, Rebbe is not stating with certainty that they're testifying about the signatures. Rebbe says, I don't know. Are they testifying about the signatures? Or are they testifying about what's in the shtar? Rebbe is actually unclear what they're arguing about. And therefore, if they're testifying about the signature, so then they would need to have a second witness to come with them to authenticate the signature. You need shnei edim, api shnayim edim. Or do we say that Rebbe says, I'm not sure, maybe they're testifying about the content of the shtar, and then you have Reuven and Shimon each saying that, you know, Yankel lent Yitzchak $100. And the nafkamina between these two would be hecha demis chad minayhu. The nafkamina between saying that the testifying about the signature or the testifying about the content would be if Rachmon Litzlan, Reuven or Shimon died. And in that situation, then you would need two people to come and testify about the signature, because certainly the other two people can't testify about the content of the shtar, they weren't there. Because the im kain, it would be that you could just have Shimon testifying, let's say Reuven died, so then Karnothic, then it would turn out that Mechi Riva, less a quarter, the Mamona of the entire amount, Apumo Dechad Sada, came about through one witness. What do you mean less than a quarter? Because Shimon would be testifying about his own signature 100%, and he would be testifying 50% about Reuven's signature. And in that situation, he's basically doing 50% plus 25%, half of the other 50%. So one witness is giving 75%, Nechi Riva, less a quarter than 100%. And that isn't allowed, that one witness should give more than 50%. You have the two witnesses each basically saying 50% of the evidence. So therefore, in this situation, we wouldn't allow Reuven. You need to have Liboy Shnayim in Ashuk. We wouldn't allow Shimon to testify about Reuven's signature in that situation. And therefore, V'hocha L'chumra, in this situation, Rebbe says we absolutely say that they're testifying, when they testify, they're testifying about the signatures. V'hocha L'chumra. Likewise, we're saying when one witness died, you have to bring two witnesses along to testify because they're testifying about the signatures. So, therefore, I might have thought that Rebbe was Sefuki Misavkalei, Kamash Malon. So the Chiddush over here of our starting off the Gemara by saying this is what they're talking about, this is the Machlokas between Rebbe and the Chachamim, is because I might have thought otherwise. I might have thought that Rebbe was Sefuki Misavkalei, Kamash Malon. The Chiddush of this statement, the beginning of the Gemara, is the Rebbe Mivshat Pshitale. Rebbe was in fact 100% certain that the witnesses, Reuven and Shimon, are each testifying about their signatures and not about the content. And that's why you need to have two witnesses. If Reuven and Shimon each testify about their signature and the other signature, that's fine. Or if Reuven pairs up with Levi about a signature and Shimon pairs up with Yehuda about a signature, that will be fine as well. Because Rebbe holds that you definitely are testifying about the signature, not about the content. The Rebbe Mivshat Pshitale. It's clear to Rebbe that that's what they're testifying about. And this could be Ben Lekula, Ben Lechumra. This could be, even if it's going to lead to a Kula, as Rashi says in Dibra Maschel Ben Lekula, it's all the way down towards the bottom of the Omer. Ki hocha de ilu l'rabbonon, according to Chachamim, boy shnayim in ashok, she'idu al shemes. So according to the Chachamim, you definitely need two people because you're testifying about the content, and the content, the other two people can't say one person is enough. You need definitely two witnesses to say that that's the signature because they're testifying about the content. And according to Rebbe, no, they're testifying about the signature. So then you could actually have Shimon pairing up with Levi to testify about Reuven's signature, and Shimon could testify with Yehuda to testify about Shimon's signature. So even though Shimon is the witness on both of them, and Levi is a witness on one, and Yehuda is a witness on the other, that would be fine. So this is true. Rebbe holds that the Mifshat Pshitale about the signature, Ben Lekula, Ben Lechumra. This would be true, whether it was Lekula or Lechumra. Rebbe is absolutely stating they're testifying about the signature, and the opinion of the Chachamim is that they're testifying about the content of the Shtar. And the Gemara says, I'll show you that this is right, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, because Rav Yehuda is the name of Rav, Shnayim achasum al shtar. In a case where you have two people, Reuven and Shimon, that signed on a shtar, and Nebuch Reuven passes away. So tzrichim shnayim in ashuk l'hoda love. You need two separate people. You need Levi and Yehuda to come along and say that that's Reuven's signature. And bezu, Rebbe Lekula, for Rabban L'chumra. In this situation, Rebbe would say, no, you would just need one other person to come along and testify with Shimon. So Rebbe is Lekula, whereas the Rabban would say, no, you can't have Shimon come and testify about his signature, as well as about Reuven's signature, because then it would be Nechi Riva, and that would be no good, because he's testifying about 75%, whereas the Chachamim say it's L'chumra, it's no good, whereas Rebbe would say it's L'kula, it is good. With this, we conclude today's share.